It's a very bizarre experience that I think a lot of us are having here in the United States of late. I think the social disintegration that's happening so rapidly, and as things begin to unravel. But one of the things about Muslim countries, even when things break down, people really do recognize the word brother and sister. Like, that word actually means something in many, many places around the world. And I've experienced the beauty of that word, not so much as it's articulated, ya akhi, but the real lived experience of somebody treating you like a brother or like a sister. I was thinking a lot about United Against Poverty. I actually think it'd be better if we were united against wealth. I've actually lived in the poorest countries in the world. I mean, literally the poorest. Like, I was in Niger, I was in Mali, I was in Mauritania. I lived in a place in Mauritania where the rich people had all of their possessions in one box, and the poor people didn't have a box. I mean, really. And my own teacher, Marab Tarhaj, may Allah preserve him, he was actually considered relatively wealthy because he had a few cows that were milked every day, and that's where they drank their milk. The milk in Tuamrat is organic milk. What I noted about living in the poorest places, and I literally lived in a shanty town. I mean, a complete, like, open sewage. The houses were made out of Chinese tea boxes, literally, that were dissembled from tea boxes, and that's how they made their houses. And I lived with a man, Al-Maqari, from the Masuma clan, in his little hut made out of tea cartons. And these were some of the richest people I have ever known. They were rich in community. They were rich in culture. They were people that could quote the greatest Arabic poetry ever written. Most of them memorized the Quran by heart. And for entertainment, they would discuss grammatical points. These were really rich people. They were not impoverished, unless you want to identify poverty as material poverty. And I'm not really against material poverty, but I'm very much against cultural and spiritual poverty. Because I think what's happening in this country is we are the most culturally and spiritually impoverished nation in the world. The fact that the number one best-selling novel right now is a pornographic novel of no literary merit, according to the critics that have read it. But this is what's happening in America. Every airport I've been to has a whole row of these novels just lined up for people just to devour them off the shelves. That is poverty. If you're from this culture, it's poverty not to have ever read Melville, so that when somebody like Chris Hedges can tell you about the Pequod or Ahab's quest, you don't have any cultural references to know what that means, despite the fact that even the poorest Americans 100 years ago had very often read that book. Because literature is not the property of the wealthy. Historically, literature has actually been the property of the most impoverished people. Some of the greatest writers were impoverished people. Read about their lives, and yet they produced this great body of literature because they were not culturally impoverished. They may have been materially impoverished, but they were not culturally impoverished. One of the most celebrated artists in Western tradition is Van Gogh, And he was a completely impoverished person, supported by his brother, never sold a painting during his own lifetime. Another very tortured person, but somebody who had a richness of vision that people are still entranced by. So I think that a lot of what's happening in this country is actually from luxuria. It's actually from luxuria. Used to be one of the seven deadly sins. That's the Latin term for lust, luxuria. That we're a surfeited culture. We're too full. There's too much. When people talk about the 99 and the 1%, we're 5% of the world's population, and we're devouring most of the world's natural resources. The average American is in the 5%. The other part of the world is the other 95%. So when we're talking about the 1% and the 99%, some of the people in that 1% are drug dealers in inner cities. So the whole dichotomization, this desire to kind of split the world into good people and evil people, to me is a false dialectic that I think as Muslims we should reject. We should reject it. There are wretched, demonic people amongst the poor, and there are decent, angelic people amongst the wealthy. And the Prophet ﷺ had poor people with him, and he had wealthy people. And without the wealthy people, he could not have done what he did for the poor people. But he transformed the motives of the wealthy. He transformed their motives. He didn't create a class warfare. He didn't make the poor people hate the wealthy people or the wealthy people feel contempt for the poor people. No. He gave us a different criterion to judge people. We were talking earlier today about intellectual arrogance, because you see so many people in academia that are filled with intellectual arrogance, a sense of their inherent superiority. Because if you learn even a little bit, you quickly see how far ahead you are from a lot of people out there. And that can lead to a type of contempt, because you have some kind of intellectual training that other people do, because you can work things out quicker than other people can work out, because you know these references and other people don't know these references. But the reality of it is that Islam put a different criterion for excellence than intellectual excellence. It's spiritual excellence. It's being a human being. And that is open to the poorest of the poor and the richest of the rich. And that's what separates people. So that street sweeper, that janitor, might have more humanity, ounce per ounce, than that PhD professor at Yale University. He might have better character, more moral integrity. He might be a better father, a better civic member of society. Because the real judge of people in Islam is the judge of character. It's not anything else. If that's what we have to offer, we don't have the richness of tradition. Looking back into the past, what did they do? What did they do that can inspire us today to do it in our own way? We have to reestablish family as the central, most important unit of a society, because Islam is about preservation of family. It's one of the six fundamentals. Preservation of family. If you look now in the inner cities at the disintegration of the family, because if you take the father out of fatherhood, if you take the father out of motherhood, if you take the brother out of brotherhood and the sister out of sisterhood, what do you have left? The hood. That's all you've got left. That's it. And people cannot survive in those conditions. They will die. Camden, New Jersey, Chris Hedges wrote a whole section on his book, The Empire of Illusion, about that town. They're going to dismantle the police force in Camden. They don't have money, so they're just going to regionalize it. Highest crime rate in America. Just leave the poor people there. There's children on the streets. Doesn't matter. Because these are throwaway people. We have to be real about helping these communities. We want to get the best and the brightest, give them scholarships so that they can give back. We don't want the migration up, right? This is what happened with the black middle class and upper middle class. They just moved up and they didn't pick anybody else up with them. And now they're completely alienated, and you have completely separate African-American communities in the United States that can't relate to each other. Right? And the situation is so bad in places like East Oakland. Really, it's so bad. And it's right next door. It's right next door. We're seeing social disintegration, and we have a moral responsibility as a Muslim community. We have a moral responsibility to serve the underserved. The Prophet ﷺ promised us that you are given victory by the weakest amongst you. And he meant du'afa, he meant like poor people. That's who he was talking about. And he lived amongst them. And Allah commanded him to be patient with the poorest of people who call on their Lord in the morning and in the evening. Be patient with them. Be with them. Don't hang out with the rich people. Hang out with the poor people. That's what he told them. Allah told him to be with those people, elevate them, lift them up, bring them up. We need to dignify poverty in this country, because poverty in this country is a blemish. It's like something's wrong with you. You're like a moral leper. It's God's got his. This is Protestantism at its worst. This idea somehow that God's grace is when you get lots of money. Matthew 19:21. Quoting Christian scripture here, when the man comes to Jesus and Jesus says, go and sell your garment and give it to the poor, right? Go and sell your goods and give it to the poor, and you'll have a treasure in heaven. If you want to be perfect, go and sell your material possessions and then give it to the poor, and then you can get a treasure in heaven, and you follow me. The Catholics took that very seriously, and that's why in the Catholic tradition, the highest thing is to renounce wealth. That's what monks do. They have a vow of chastity, poverty, and obedience. Chastity, poverty, and obedience. All those nuns in those Catholic schools, they were all working for free. They were working for free. The Prophet ﷺ chose poverty over wealth. He was given a choice to be a slave prophet or a king prophet. And he chose to be a slave prophet. He lowered his standard of living so that other standards could be raised up. That's a challenge. That's a moral challenge for people. It's a moral challenge. I was once in West Africa with an Egyptian American from New York. And we were in a jeep out in the middle of the Sahara. And he saw all of these wild animals. He said, man, this is just like the Nature Channel. I said, no. The Nature Channel is like this. Yeah, you got it wrong. Right? But if you watch those programs, when the lion gets the zebra, watch the other zebras. You watch them. Because they're all running, but right when that lion gets the zebra, they all stop and they go back to eating. Because they know, you know, Harvey's gone. The lion got his lunch. You know, it's over. But the lion will not eat the whole flock, because the lion has a limit, a natural limit. Aristotle said, man is the only one that has no natural limits. إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَيَطْغَى أَرَّآهُ اسْتَغْنَى. Surely man goes to excess when he deems himself wealthy. When he deems himself wealthy. Allah is the wealthy, and we are the poor. Assalamu alaikum.